Good afternoon. We are beginning today our new series entitled Eretz Yisrael, the Talmud, and Rav Kook. And the goal here that we're going to try to focus on is we're going to take selections from the Talmud, areas in the Talmud, which Rav Kook himself analyzes from the perspective of his own Zionism. But let me explain a little bit what I mean by that. We understand that the Jewish people were sent into Galut, were sent into exile. The Beit HaMikdash was destroyed in the year 70, 69, 70, depending on how you count. And the Jewish people went into exile a little bit then, but over time, until, if you go to 1,000 years later, there's almost no Jews in Eretz Yisrael. The Ramban, Nachmanides, writes that when he arrived in Yerushalayim, he had to run away from Spain because of his, that he was being chased. So when he arrives in Yerushalayim, he says he could not find a minion of Jews in Yerushalayim.
What year was it?
So this is in the 12th century. Eretz Yisrael becomes devoid of Jews. There are two major events that would bring the greatest number of Jewish people back from Galut, from Chutz La'aretz to Eretz Yisrael, from the diaspora back to Eretz Yisrael. The first is the expulsion from Spain. By that time, 1492, there were many Jews who had already gone back to Eretz Yisrael. There was a little bit of an established community in Eretz Yisrael, especially by the Rishonim, like the Ramban and others. But there wasn't a significant number of Jews. But after the Jews were expelled from Spain, the Jews came by the thousands to Eretz Yisrael and reestablished some kind of yishuv. Not everyone left. Who left Spain came to Eretz Yisrael. Many of them went to Italy and to Greece, and many ended up in Turkey. But eventually, even some of those, like for example, Rabbi Yosef Cairo, the author of the Shulchan Aruch. So he was born in Spain, but his family Portugal, and then they went to Turkey. But eventually, he made his way to Eretz Yisrael. That was considered the higher way of a greater way of living would be to be moser nefesh, to sacrifice oneself, not to live in the comforts of Chutz La'aretz, but instead to go to Eretz Yisrael, where to live there was difficult. And we're not. I don't think we're going to get there today. But Rav Kook is actually going to talk about this. Why is it that living in Eretz Yisrael has to be difficult? Why is it that way? So we'll get there. The second major event that brings Jews from Chutz La'aretz to Eretz Yisrael is, of course, the Holocaust. Right? But it's more so that there was an entire movement that was started by in the 1800s. So, many of you are familiar with the stories. I'm going to try to avoid the historical discussion and focus more on the Torah discussion. But we have to understand that there was a big, big movement towards the end of the 1800s into the 1900s to reestablish a land for the Jews, primarily. It was as a response to anti-Semitism. So, for example, Herzl, who worked very hard to try to get the Jews back their land, his focus was not so much because he felt like he wasn't able to keep Shabbat so well in Chutz La'aretz. His focus was the Jews were in danger, the whole Dreyfus affair, without getting into the history of it, the Jews were in danger, and the only way to protect the Jewish people would be for the Jewish people to have their own land, their own place where they can live to protect themselves. But as you can understand, this is not, at this point, a religious movement. One would even say that it's an anti-religious movement, because it did have a lot of anti-religious undertones to the movement. And so because of that, generally speaking, it was a movement that was only bought into in a real way by the non-religious. But this concept...
Movement, you mean the coming back of the Jews from Gula to Israel?
Specifically to reestablish a Jewish state. That was very much a non-religious... In other words, the Jews were always moving to Eretz Yisrael. The students of the Vilna Gaon, the Vilna Gaon said that we have to move to Eretz Yisrael. The Baal Shem Tov students, many of them moved to Eretz Yisrael. Today we have... You go to Tveria and you can see there's an entire cemetery of all the Jews who were Hasidic Jews living in Europe who they had relatively comfortable lives and they came to Eretz Israel because that's a higher way of living, even in Galut, which we're going to talk about in Rav Kook's writings.
But the Jews who were expelled from Spain, were they not religious?
No, they were, but they weren't looking to make a Jewish state,
oh,
right? They were just moving to Eretz Israel because living in Eretz Israel is a holier place and all that, which we're going to talk about. But there wasn't any religious movement within the Jewish people. Right.
They didn't even know what Shabbat is, I don't think.
Yeah, absolutely. There wasn't anything religious in that movement. And so because of that, the general population of the religious Jews considered the whole movement to be irreverent and unholy. And so that's why there was such a resistance from the religious side of the... We'll see, Rav Kook changes all this. But there was such a resistance from the religious perspective, from the perspective of the religious Jews, to the whole movement. So even though they were into moving to Eretz Yisrael, but moving to Eretz Yisrael in the format of taking control of the land and making it a Jewish state, that was considered a negative, bad thing to do. So not just it was not, it was they didn't participate, but they considered it even to be inappropriate. And generally speaking, they used these religious Jews, cited places in the Talmud that seemed to suggest that the Jewish people need to stay in exile, to stay in Galut. And so because of that, it became almost like a religious Jews versus non-religious Jews. And there wasn't... the movement towards Zionism didn't really have... Again, before Rav Kook comes along, there were great rabbis who tried to develop a sort of religious Zionism, but it didn't really work. Rav Kook changes that. Rav Kook, who was one of the greatest scholars of his generation, a student of the Volozhin Yeshiva, the foremost of the yeshivas, and pretty much universally accepted as a great Torah scholar. As we'll see, not everyone agrees with the things that he said. But he comes to this understanding that in order for the Jewish people to move forward and to bring about the geula, the redemption, Rav Kook argues that the Jewish people need to take an initiative, which is not the position of all the rabbis before him. All the others said, and we have to wait. And more specifically, Rav Kook's not disagreeing with that, but he's saying part of the achakelo b'chol yom sheyavo requires that we should initiate the process. Now that's what Rav Kook is. Now the question is, where is he seeing this? Right, you can't just make it up on your own. So Rav Kook has a lot of writings on this subject. A lot of writings. I mean, obviously he's the foremost spiritual leader of the religious Zionist movement. So obviously there's a lot of writings for him. But specifically, what we're going to focus on, which is something that I think isn't so much studied, is how Rav Kook took the sources from the Talmud itself and used it to develop his understanding of the relationship between the Jews and Eretz Yisrael, and specifically, and we'll get to, I mean, we're not going to start with this. Eventually, I think maybe class number 9 or number 10, we have a series of 10 classes here, either 9 or 10, we'll talk about directly where the Talmud says you're not allowed to go to Eretz Yisrael because you have to stay in Galut, and Rav Kook is going to explain to us what that really means in his understanding. Right? But first, what I'd like to do is go through a little bit of an understanding of where is Rav Kook coming from? What is his understanding of the role of Eretz Yisrael? And what I want you to appreciate, besides for the learning about the, you know, the sources for religious Zionism, and that was the question that someone asked a few months ago. You know, is there, you know, you hear a lot from the anti-Zionist leaders, you hear a lot about how the Zionists are apikorsim, is the word they use, heretics, because basically if you look in the Talmud seems to say that Galut is Galut, exile, and even if you can go to Eretz Yisrael, but to make a state, to go against the nations of the world, that's the argument. Where are the responses? Where are the explanations for the Jews who do take a Zionistic approach to modern day understanding of Eretz Yisrael? Where is the responses to that? So that's what I'm saying. We'll learn what Rav Kook has to say about that, but before we learn about that, we first have to understand the role of Eretz Yisrael and what is its role in Yahadut, in Judaism. So we're going to spend a few classes talking about a very, very interesting perspective that Rav Kook has with Eretz Yisrael. And as you'll see, Rav Kook understands, and we'll see this inside, he understands that a Jew is not fully a Jew without Eretz Yisrael, and the Torah is not fully the Torah without Eretz Yisrael. He's going to develop this from a number of sources in the Talmud. So we'll make copies for next time, but today I'm going to read to you the sections in the Talmud, and then we'll discuss it. What I'd like to do today is take one place in the Talmud, show you how another one of the commentators understands it, how the Maharsha understands it, and then compare it to the way that Rav Kook explains this section in the Talmud.
Yeah, they were Zionists that really wanted to be Knanim, just to live in the land and not to practice anything.
Right, so as we'll see, you know, the question is whether that's called Zionism, right? So living in Eretz Israel was always something that Jews did, but living as strangers in our own land, which is very difficult concept. I mean, think back to the Jews in the year 1500 who were living in Eretz Yisrael. It's Eretz Yisrael, but it was owned by the Ottoman Empire, and so they were in charge, and it's a very, very strange feeling, right? Right? Not that much different than if you were living in British-occupied Palestine, right? So,
yeah.
Okay. Says the Talmud, this is a Gemara in Brachot, Chet Amud Aleph, 8a. I'm going to read to you the whole section in the Talmud, and then we'll discuss it. My dichtiv, what is the meaning of Va'ani Tefilati Lecha Hashem Et Ratzon? What is the meaning of Va'ani Tefilati, and I, my prayer, this is a verse in Tehillim, Lecha, to you Hashem Et Ratzon, is a time of favor. Says the Talmud, this teaches you, Eimatai Et Ratzon, when is it a time of favor? B'sha'a She'hatzibur Mitpalalim, We'll get to the Eretz Yisrael section in a minute. I just want you to understand the context of that Gemara. Means that when you have a group of Jews praying, that's an Eitz Ratzon. That's a time of favor when Hashem answers. And this is the source for why praying with a group is greater than praying as an individual. Rabbi Yossi Rav Chanina Amar Mihacha. Rabbi Yossi Rav Chanina says it's not a pasuk in Tehillim. There's a similar verse in Yeshaya. Ko Amar Hashem, so says Hashem, Be'et Ratzon initicha. In a time of favor, I will answer you. So that means that there is a time of favor. Rav Achi Rav Chanina Amar Mihacha. Rav Achi Rav Chanina says, Hein kel kabir velo yimas. God accepts, He will not reject our prayers. Uchtiv, and it says, Pada b'shalom nafshi mikerav li ki v'rabim hayu imadi. Tanya Nami Hachi, says the Talmud. We have another source. Rabbi Nassan Omer Minayin She'ena Kadosh Baruch Hu Ma'ois B'Tfilatam Shal Rabim. How do we know that God does not reject the prayers of the tzibur, of the many? Shenamar, as it says in the verse, Hein Kel Kabir V'lo Yimas, God does not reject. Uchtiv B'Pada B'Shalom Nafshi Mikrav Li. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem is saying, Kol HaOseg B'Torah U'B'Gemilut Chasadim U'Mitpalel Im HaTzibur. If you study Torah and you do Gemilut Chasadim, kind deeds, umitpalel im hatzibur, and you pray with the tzibur, with the group, male ani alav, I consider it, ki ilu pda'ani, as if you redeemed li ulabanai miben umot ha'olam. You have redeemed God and the Jewish people from amongst the nations of the world. Puzzling statement, right? The Talmud is saying, if you study Torah, and you do Gemilut Chasadim, and you pray with the Tzibur, now we know what that means, because that's, you know, there's three pillars that the world stands on. Torah, Avodah, and Gemilut Chasadim, right? So Torah means studying Torah, and Gemilut Chasadim, and then Avodah is praying with the Tzibur. So you're considered as if you are redeeming God from exile. Which is, of course, a very common Talmudic concept, that when we are in exile, God is in exile too. Amar Reish Lakish said, Reish Lakish, if that's the case, kol mi sheyesh lo beit knesset bi'iro, if you have a shul in your city, ve'eino nichnas sham lehitpalel, and you don't go to pray there, nikra shachen ra, you're considered a bad neighbor. Shenemar, as it says, ko amar Hashem, so says Hashem, Al kol shchenei haraim hanogiim banachala asher nachalti et ami et Yisrael. So says Hashem to all the bad neighbors who are afflicting my inheritance that I've inherited the Jewish people, which we're saying is the shul in your town, is your nachala. So you, if you don't go in there, you're a bad neighbor. V'lo, not only that, ela shegoreim galut lo labanav, you extend the exile for yourself and your descendants. Shenamar, as it says, Hinini no chami alad matam, ve'et beit Yehuda atush mitocham. Now, all that is the introduction, and now we come to the section of the Talmud that's important to us. Amru lei le Rabbi Yochanan. They said to Rabbi Yochanan, Ika sabi bebavel, there are old people, old Jews in Bavel. Tama, he said, impossible. There cannot be old Jews in Bavel. Now, I want you to, for Talmudic terms, I want you to understand that Bavel here means Chutz La'aretz, right? That's where the Jews were living. Some were living in Eretz Yisrael, some were living in Bavel. Were there Jews other places? Yeah, here and there. But generally, Eretz Yisrael and Bavel were the two places that the Jews lived. Eretz Yisrael is, now this is in the days of Rabbi Yochanan, I'll explain the history of this soon. Eretz Yisrael had many Jews living in it. Bavel had many Jews living in it. And they told him that there are old people, old Jews in Bavel. Tama.
Because of this, there is Talmud Bavli and Talmud Yerushalmi.
Yes, yes.
So they were
yeah, absolutely. The rabbis in Eretz Yisrael, they called the Torah Talmud Yerushalmi, even though they weren't in Yerushalayim. If you know the history, you know that the Jews were banned from Yerushalayim by the Romans for a while. We weren't even allowed to be in Yerushalayim, but because of that, we called it Yerushalmi. Just,
so where yeah. did they live?
So they were living all over Eretz Yisrael,
but
not Yerushalayim. Yeah,
Right.
Bavel means Galut, right? So because that's where they were, Bavel, right? So it would translate into America today. So someone told him, Rabbi Yochanan, that there are old Jews in Bavel. Tama, he said, impossible. He wondered, V'amar. We say this in the Shema. Leman yirbu yemechem v'mei v'nechem, so that your lives and the lives of your children will be extended, will be long, al ha'adama kitiv, only on the land. Aval b'chutz la'aretz lo, there should not be Jews with long lives in chutz la'aretz. That was what Rabbi Yochanan said. Kev and the Amrilei, but then they told him, mekadmei u'mechashchei lebei knishta, that there are Jews in Bavel, they come very early to shul, and they stay late in the shul until the evening. Amar, he said, okay, that makes sense. Hainu da'ahani lehu, that's why there are Jews who live long. Because there are Jews who go to synagogue early in the morning and they stay late at night. So okay, then there can be old Jews in Bavel too. Why? Kedama Rabbi Shua ben Levi lebanei, because I know Rabbi Shua ben Levi said to his children, Kadimu v'chashichu, stay, come early and stay late. V'aylu lebeik nishta in the shul, ki hechi the torchu chaye, so that you will live a long life. So coming early to the synagogue and staying late extends your life. Amar Rabbi Acha ber Rabbi Chanina. Rabbi Acha, the son of Rabbi Chanina, said, "My kara." Where do we see a pasuk in the Torah that says that if you hang out in shul, that you live longer? So he said, Mishle, chapter 8. There it says, Ashrei Adam Shomei Ali, fortunate is the man who listens to me, Lishkod al daltota yom yom, to be constant at my doors every day. Lishmor mezuzat pitchei, to guard the thresholds of my doors. Uktiv batrei, and that's followed by, Ki motza'ei motza'chaim, those who find me find life. That's the quote in the Talmud. So, Before we get into the commentators, again, we're going to see two explanations of this Talmud. One, a traditional explanation from the Maharsha, and then we're going to read the words of Rav Kook, who has a different understanding of what's happening here in this discussion. But let's just go back to the history. Once again, the Beit HaMikdash is destroyed in the year 68, 69, 70, depends on which commentary. Let's use the number 70 for our calculations. The year 70. At that time, the Romans are in charge, and they're going to be in charge for a while. But the Jews are still living in Eretz Yisrael. There are Jews in Bavel, but the center of the yeshuv of the Jewish community is in Eretz Yisrael at the time of the destruction and even after the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. This would continue for almost 200 years until the death of Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi. The death of Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi in the 3rd century was the end of the Jewish people having what we would call relative peace post-destruction. Now, I say relative peace because the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed in the year 70. It was terrible there. And then later, by the Bar Kokhba rebellion, it was even worse. There were massacres and the Romans killed out entire cities filled with Jews. But over the next 100 years or so, the Romans felt like they taught the Jews a lesson, so they rebuilt the country. And there was a relative, comfort, relatively speaking, from our outside enemies. But and Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, who was friends with the Roman emperor, so much friends that he was able to compile the Mishnah and gather together all the sages of the generation, he had the freedom to move that way. And we're lucky he did, because if he would not have had this little window of relative peace, we would never have had the Mishnah. So Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, but when he dies, everything kind of falls apart. So he had three major students, Rav, Shmuel, and Rabbi Yochanan. Rav and Shmuel moved to Bavel. And they opened the great yeshivot of Bavel, which would turn into the rabbis who would form the Talmud Bavli. Rabbi Yochanan stays in Eretz Yisrael. I'm oversimplifying this, but Rabbi Yochanan stays in Eretz Yisrael and continues to teach Torah in Eretz Yisrael, and he was the leader of the Eretz Yisrael Amoraim. So as you can understand, Rabbi Yochanan felt that those who went to Chutz La'aretz, those who left, that they didn't do the right thing. And that's why he's commenting here, and he says there should not be old people. Leman yirbu yimechem v'mevenechem al ha'adama, that Jews only have access to the blessing of longevity and long life in Eretz Yisrael. It is interesting, you should know this, that even today, there's a certain blessing of long life that is on Jews in Eretz Yisrael, which we'll see within the writings of Rav Kook how he understands it. But Rabbi Yochanan was bothered. I don't know if I can emphasize this enough. He said, what do you mean an old person in Chutz La'aretz? You can't have old people in Chutz La'aretz. Why not? Because the Torah says that Leman Yirbu. Right? Okay. So that's what we need to understand here. So says first from the Maharsha. The Maharsha is the great commentator on the Talmud. Specifically, if you want to understand the Agadot in the Talmud, so the Maharsha is the first place where you go. So here's what he says. Yesh lefarish, you can explain this. Api masha amru, he quotes a Gemara in Megillah. You've all heard this Gemara in Megillah. You've heard this quoted before. Atidin batei kenesiot ubatei midrashot shebabavel sheyikvu be'eretz Yisrael. That in the future, all the synagogues of Bavel, meaning of Chutz La'aretz, are going to lift themselves up, right? We are in the synagogue right now. So the Talmud, the Megillah tells us that the synagogues will be reestablished and replanted in Eretz Yisrael. Now, I think we discussed this once, maybe a different class, that some don't like to learn this literally, and they say that it just means that when we come to Eretz Yisrael, the entire community will come as one and build a shul there, and so we will stay together. But some read it literally, that the shuls are going to pick themselves up, and some take it so far as to say that when Mashiach comes, that everyone's going to come into the shul, and the shuls will carry us to Eretz Yisrael. Right? There's a famous story that's told about a certain shul that they had an earth floor. You know, it was just they built the building, but they never tiled the floor. They never put it down. So when the gabbai wanted to make an appeal, he wanted to put down the floor. He said, "Morai v'rabutai, what's going to happen when Mashiach is going to come? Everyone's going to come into the shul, and the shuls are going to carry us to Eretz Yisrael, but we don't have a floor." So the shul's going to lift up, and we're going to remain standing here. So we need to build a floor. That was his... But that's a very literal understanding of that statement in Talmud. Says the Maharsha. V'ka'amar al derech zeh, shcheine ha-ra'im ha-nogi'im ba-nachla. So if you don't go to shul, you're considered a bad neighbor. The ha'inu should nogi'a davar zeh ba-nachla asher nachalti livnei Yisrael shehu Eretz Yisrael. That means, he's saying, your shul is an extension of Eretz Yisrael. If in the future your shul is going to pick itself up and go to Eretz Yisrael, then your shul already has Eretz Yisrael in it. So if you don't go to shul, then you're considered a bad neighbor because you are not participating in the hitnachalut of Eretz Yisrael by coming to shul. The Otam Batik in the Siot Sheba Bavel, Gam Hem Yu Michlal Eretz Yisrael. They're going to be part of Eretz Yisrael. She Ikvu Sham La'atid, because they will be planted there in the future. So once the Talmud says that, the Talmud then understands that if the Shul is an extension of Eretz Yisrael, Almighty Allah, so now we understand the story. He said, Ikasabi beBavel, there's old people in Bavel. Tama, how could that be? It says, Alo Adama. And the answer is, Dahanu le de Kadima v'chashichu, because they spend so much time in Shul, Dahanu time in the Beknishta beBavel, Ki ilu heim ala Adama. So coming to your Shul in Chutz La'aretz is like being in Eretz Yisrael. So the more time you spend in shul, the longer you live. That's the way the Maharsha is explaining it. Because again, he said, it's an interesting idea, right? You know, this reminds me of the Chatam Sofer, Rabbi Moshe Sofer. He used to pray a long prayer. His his private Amidah was very long. So, you know, amongst the scholars, the Talmidei Chachamim, many of them, they daven very quickly, because since their focus is on Torah learning, they consider praying too long to be bitul Torah. Right? Because we know that studying Torah is a bigger mitzvah than tefillah. Torah is greater than tefillah. So they said, spend more time on Torah. So one of them came to the Chatam Sofer and says to him, I don't understand. You're praying such a long prayer. That's bitul Torah. How do you justify it? So he says, I've made a mathematical calculation like this. The Talmud tells us, "Kol ha-marich b'tfilato," if you pray long, "marichin lo yamav u'shnotav," you live longer. So he says, I'm investing. Right? I'm hoping that the amount of time I spend in my prayer earns me enough life to make up for my bitul Torah by adding more years to my life. Right? That's the Chatam Sofer. So, but it's really what the Maharsha is saying. The Maharsha is learning that coming to your shul, just wherever you are, when you go to synagogue, when you go to pray, you are going to Eretz Yisrael. Sha'arei yikba la'atid sham be'Eretz Yisrael, because in the future, your shul is going to go to Eretz Yisrael. Umayti ala maikros, that's why the Talmud quotes the verse, al daltotai yom yom, milashin kaful, it's a double language, meaning that they're coming b'shachrit, and in the evening. And then it says, Kimotza'e, those who find me. And meaning, those who find Hashem, Motza'e Chaim, they find life even in Bavel. That's the Maharsha. And I want you to understand, this is the standard explanation of how everyone explains this Talmud, this line in the Talmud. And it's important to understand what the general explanation is, because we're going to go to Rav Kook now and see where Rav Kook is with this line. So once again, the Talmud says that coming to shul is how you earn long life. Coming to shul is how, if you don't go to shul, you're a bad neighbor and you extend the galut. Why does not going to shul extend the galut? So the answer is, according to the Maharsha, because galut is outside of shul. In shul, you are in Eretz Yisrael, and that's why when there's old people in Bavel, there's old people because they spend time in shul. So if you spend time in shul, it extends your life.
Okay? So this was the idea of the rabbis in college, that you don't need to go to Israel, because if you study in yeshiva or shul, you are in Israel, so you shouldn't go to Israel.
Right, right. That's the way the other. If you learn like the Maharsha, if you learn like the way he's explaining it, then you don't need to go to Eretz Yisrael. Just go to shul, right? And that's the simple understanding of this line in the Talmud.
Jews, even though they saw the Nazis coming, to go to Israel because.
Well, at this point, we're only showing that you don't need to go, according to the simple understanding of the Talmud, but not necessarily that you're not allowed to go. We're going to deal with where Rav Kook is going to address those places in the Talmud that actually make it seem like you're not allowed to. He's going to explain what that means. We'll get there. But right now, all we know is that you can go to shul or you can go to Eretz Israel, right? Says Rav Kook, I'm reading from Rav Kook's writings.
Oh.
Yeah. It's in the Sefer Ein Aya is, and I'm going to talk about this because this is important. Ein Aya is written before Rav Kook goes to Eretz Yisrael, before he moves there.
When was he born?
To check the exact years when he moves to Eretz Yisrael. Let me see if I can get a.
So Ein
Aya,
he wrote it in Ein Aya, Aleph
Yud Hey. Aleph Yud Hey, right? It's based on a pasuk. So he's born in 1865, but he in 1904 is when he comes to Yafo. Right? He became the chief rabbi of Yafo. 1905. Right. Okay. So most of this writing of what we're seeing here, you know, he's before, you know, he's 40 years old when he comes to Eretz Yisrael. So most of this is written before, and I think it's important because you can see, we'll see in his writings, such a deep element of gaguim. I don't know if this is a good English word to say it. Yeah, I know longing is maybe a good word, but I think the Hebrew, the word gaguim, you can see in his writings, this he has this desire to come to Eretz Yisrael. So, and one more thing I want to say before I start reading from Rav Kook is that the irony is Rav Kook's language, his Hebrew, is so complex but beautiful that sometimes, and I've heard people say this, it's hard to understand what he's saying because you're so captivated by the beauty of his expression of language. And we don't have many authors who write in the way that he writes. And you'll see what I mean. It almost when people, I've heard people say this to me, I tried to learn Rav Kook and the language is too difficult. And I always say to them that he's not writing, copying other people's style of writing. He creates his own style. And when that happens, you have to read and read and read until you become comfortable and familiar with his writings. So what's interesting is, you know, in the yeshivot that I studied in, none of this was ever taught. And one might even ask, so why did I learn this if this is not, you know, Rav Kook's teachings are not taught in the mainstream yeshivot? And the answer is because if there's any part of Torah that you haven't studied, you're missing something, right? Even if it's not the position that you take, you should still be able to learn it and study it. So I think they're losing out by not reading some of this idea. And you'll see some of the ideas that Rav Kook presents, besides for, you know, the religious Zionism and all that, they're so brilliant. Just, and we'll see some of these sections of the Talmud. There's a section of the Talmud which we're going to read, I'm not sure if we'll get to class 5 or class 6, that my entire life I had this question and I've not seen a good answer, and he answered this question in his writing. So, you know, that itself is, anyway, we'll see. Okay, Amru lo, this is from Rav Kook's writings. Amru lo le Rabbi Yochanan, they said to Rabbi Yochanan, he quotes the Talmud, the ikasabe bebavel, there's old people in Bavel. Tamav Amar, he says, no, I can't be. The man yibu yimeichem al adamaktiv, avil buchutz la'aretz lo. Amru le, they said, mekadme mechachshe beknishta, oh, but they go to shul early and they stay late. Amar, haynu dahanelu, okay, now it makes sense. And I'm encouraging you, I know it'll be easier when you have the Talmud in front of you, but feel free to notice things in his language that I may not necessarily point out, but any of this can become a discussion. So this is what he says. Arichut hachayim, long life, bichlal, in general, ba'a mishnei sibot, can come from two different causes. Either misidur hachayim hamusariim, by arranging your life in, what's a good way, musariim,
moral.
Okay, let's do that. All right, arranging yourself a moral life, v'midot tovot, ubilti shituf achar ta'avot u'motarot, and not running after the desire and extra things in life. So the first way of extending your life is very practical. Living a healthy, balanced life. And people will tell you that this is true. They talk about some of the people in the Far East who live much longer. Places in like Japan and places like that, people live very long. And they always ask them, what's the secret to long life? And they say, internal balance. Right, not chasing after things, not having too much of anything or too little of anything. You know, living a healthy life lives you longer. But how do you get there? How do you get to this place where you have internal balance? Shaba rak al yidei hashpa tova shel musar v'yirat Hashem, only if you have a good influence of a moral life and fear of God. And remember, Rav Kook is very religious, right? He's a rabbi, so he's not going to understand balance as making sure that you don't eat too much or too little, and you know, in terms of making sure you get enough protein. But he's saying you have to be balanced in the terms of you eat what's healthy and not what's unhealthy, right? Or even if you have what's unhealthy, you know, moderation is the word they use, right? No sefleze, but also kochot hanafshiim, spiritual power. Sometimes a person can live long, even if physically they're not doing everything so right, but they have a strong sense of will. Right? They did a study, a fascinating study, on survivors of the Holocaust in Eretz Yisrael. So they found that those who went through the camps got sick at a much higher rate, diabetes and all kinds of diseases, right? Today in Eretz Yisrael, you know, through the years, they got sick at a higher rate than the rest of the population of Eretz Yisrael, the survivors. But they lived longer. They lived longer. How do we explain that? How do we explain that you have a specific population that gets more sick than anyone else, but they live longer? The answer is they got sick more than anyone else because they were beaten up, right, when they were young and their bodies were really damaged in very serious ways. But their willpower, right, their willpower to reestablish, right, to live and to... I remember my grandmother... Zichrona Livracha, she would look at the albums of the pictures of her grandchildren, and she would always say, "We won the war." You're talking about World War II. We won the war. She says, "This photo album is my victory." Right? He tried to wipe us all out, and here we are. She had beautiful Dorot Yisharim Umvorachim. So this power to live, he says, "Kishem mitgadlim," when your spiritual strength extends and grows, api rov marichim yemei hachayim, it extends life. Al kein tamav amar, so Rabbi Yochanan says, arichut yamim li Yisrael, a Jew can't feel those things in Chutz La'aretz. Ne'utarak be'eretz Yisrael, it's only possible in Eretz Yisrael. Why? Shekedushat ha'aretz, the land is so holy. V'hachelik ha-musari ha-gadol ha-ratzuf ba la'am Hashem, and the moral experience that comes out of the land itself. And this is the first place where we're seeing this. Rav Kook is saying, you're trying to be a Jew outside of Eretz Yisrael, you're not there. You're missing, if you're not pulling, the moral strength that comes from the land itself. Meromeim et rucham, umechazek et kochotehem anafshiim, it elevates the spirit of a Jew. Again, he's just talking about living in the land. We'll get to, you know, taking them over the land, but just living. V'gorem gamkein ladricham bederech yeshara, and allows a Jew to live the proper life. B'chayim amusariim umidot tovot. Aval b'chutz la'aretz, and I'm going to emphasize this. Rav Kook is writing this in Chutz La'aretz, right? Aval b'chutz la'aretz, sheha'aretz goremet tiruf hada'at ubilbul hamidot. Sheha'aretz goremet, meaning Chutz La'aretz, causes tiruf hada'at ubilbul hamidot. Fascinating thing. He's saying just living in the United States of America causes the influence of the morals of the United States of America to be a part of who you are, and it interferes with you living the life of a Jew. That's what he's saying.
Yeah, look at Madoff. He was a great Zionist. Honestly, he was a great...
I mean, we're just getting started, because right now he's not talking about moving in as a tzibur, but that good. That's what I want you to start noticing. But he's not gentle about it, right? He's saying you live in Chutz La'aretz, it's going to be tiruf hada'at and bilbul hamidot. You're not going to be the best you that you can be in Chutz La'aretz. So then he says, Echid chazku, hakochot anapshiim. So then how can you have such a strength, the Echid Yashua midot, liot marichot chayim, musariim tovim, amarichim yamim. So then how can you have old people? In other words, what are we saying? What gives the Jews, the Holocaust survivors, this strength? This will to live, they survived, right? So he's saying that a Jew in Chutz La'aretz can never get that same will to live and to conquer and to overcome as you could in Eretz Yisrael. So then what's the answer? What's the answer of the Talmud? Ach kada amrulei mekadmei mechachshei bebeik nishta. When they said, no, when you go to shul, amar hainu da hanulei, what he says is, ki romamut hanefesh vashfat midot tovot v'shefa chayim musariyim na'im, ba'im el alev ayideh heyoto mideh yom bebeit Hashem. He's saying is, the shul is not Eretz Yisrael, like the Maharshal says. He's not learning that way. He's saying that there are two causes for life. There's two causes to extend your life. One is the fact that you can morally become a better person and live a more balanced life. And the second is this internal spiritual strength. So he's saying the second, the internal spiritual strength, you can only get in Eretz Yisrael. But in Chutz La'aretz, you can still go to shul and study Torah and become a good, balanced person. So then that can also extend your life.
When you go every day to the house of God,
and it's a place where there's a moral life, right? People out there in business, maybe they're not so honest and not so, but in shul, you expect that people are basically better people. So then it influences you to be a better person.
So it provides a little bit of holiness in the land of their dispersion.
So now how do we know this? How do we know that if you don't have the power of Eretz Yisrael, that you can still go to shul and go, so to speak, at the secondary level of life?
So that's why the Talmud quotes the verse.
How do we know that even without the spiritual strength of Eretz Yisrael, you can,
Shenemar, because it says, Ashrei Adam Shomei Ali Lishkod Al Daltota Yom Yom Lishmor Mezuzat Pitchai,
which was the verse the Talmud quoted.
Because when you go to a place where there's wisdom and good people,
it makes you a better person. So if it makes you a better person, then you'll live longer.
So that can also elevate you.
In other words, he goes on to elaborate on this, but I want to
reiterate the point that he's making. This is, once again, Rav Kook sitting in Chutz La'aretz, trying to understand why the Talmud says, what's Rabbi Yochanan thinking? Right? Rabbi Yochanan thinks there can't be old people in Bavel. Because he's understanding, not that there can't be old Goyim in Bavel. Sure, you can have people who live long. People in Japan live a long time. But that's because that's their place. That's their place, that's their spiritual source. And so they can live that way, and they live based on the morals of their society. But for a Jew, you can't have old Jews living above El, because, as he's saying, it's the Kedusha is meromemet rucham of Eretz Yisrael. But Chutz La'aretz, it creates bilbul hadat, it creates... Tiruf adat bilbul hamidot, meaning that for someone who's living in Japan, for him to follow the Japanese way of life is an internal balance for him. But you can't find balance in the Japanese way of life. A Jew, you know how many Jews try to become Buddhists? Right? So what happens? Why do so many Jews, if you look at the list of all the great Buddhists in the world today, half of them are Jews. What happened? What happens is that Jews internally feel a very strong sense of searching for spiritual connection. And growing up in the United States, it's hard to access that. Because this is a land of materialism. I mean, not insulting. We're very grateful for everything the United States has done for us. But it's a land of materialism where the emphasis, look at the commercials and the advertisements, everything's about, here's what you're missing. If you don't have this new phone, chaser lecha chayim, right? You're missing life, right? And you see this because people will wait for 6 hours around the corner in the cold to be the first one to get this new phone. Why? Because it's got an extra certain number of pixels in the camera. Right? Okay, so it's silly. But how do you get so many people to buy into it? The answer is because the culture is that kind of culture. Says Rav Kook, that's Tira Fadat, Bilbul Amidot. And unlike the Maharsha, who explains that the shul is actually Eretz Yisrael. And I don't know if Rav Kook is necessarily disagrees with that. He's not saying that he's... But he understands it differently because he's splitting it. And he's saying that there's another source of life, that you can extend life, even not from a spiritual perspective, but from a moral perspective. Meaning that if you can be in the United States of America, and you can find yourself a source to live a moral life for you, then maybe you can get the level 2 of long life, which is a very practical physical development of long life. But the spiritual, where the land itself elevates you and makes you a better person, and because of that extends your life on a spiritual level with the strength and the fortitude, that's only in Eretz Yisrael, which, as you can see, would be a reason why Rav Kook would have this desire to move to Eretz Yisrael and to feel that everyone should move to Eretz Yisrael, which is, of course, what he is trying to get the Jewish people to do. And the whole debate over whether, why did people stay and why did people say you should stay? One of those points is the question of, as we'll see later on, does the Talmud allow you to move to Eretz Yisrael? He's saying Rabbi Yochanan is living in the time of Galut. Right? He's not living in the time of the Beit HaMikdash. Rabbi Yochanan is living in Galut. And he's saying, in the time of Galut, that you have to live in Eretz Yisrael in order to have long life, to the point where he can't even understand how you have old people. And even the Maharsha, this other commentator, basically is explaining, because the shul is Eretz Yisrael, right? But also agreeing with the concept, because actually it's a pasuk in the Torah. Leman yibru yimechem v'yimei v'nechem al ha'adama asher nishba Hashem lavoseichem. Right? So it's al ha'adama, long life for a Jew, is only in Eretz Yisrael. And so we're going to leave it at that. We'll take any questions or points that anyone wants to bring up. But that is the lesson number one in where Rav Kook sees within the Talmud itself, not only that it's okay to go to Eretz Yisrael, but almost like a complaint against any Jews who are living in Chutz La'aretz, in Bavel, like there's a complaint and almost like a negative against them because they shouldn't even be able to live long. And that's why Rav Kook is saying that, listen, if you go to shul, you can find other ways of extending your life, but Eretz Yisrael is the source for chayim for a Jew. Okay, any points that anyone wants to bring up on this?
זה מעניין שהוא ראה את זה. איך הרבנים האחרים, how the other rabbis reacted to him? Because he was, I know he influenced Rabbi Shapira and Rabbi Yablone, but most of the other rabbis,
yeah, we're going to talk about that later on. We're going to directly address why others would have looked at these teachings of Rav Kook and dismissed them. right? So we're going to save that for later. Mostly, it's because they're not going to disagree with this particular teaching. They're going to cite other sources. We're going to wait. We'll talk about there's a Gemara in Ketubot that talks about the Gimel Shavuot, the three oaths that the Jewish people took. And one of them is not shlo lalot b'choma, not to ascend. We're going to deal with all those things, so we'll break it down then when we get there. So let's hold on to that question of how the others responded. But in general, Rav Kook was not accepted. His teachings about Eretz Yisrael were not accepted, and part of that, again, we're getting ahead of ourselves. Part of that was the issue that the development of the land of Israel was happening through anti-religious people, and that was basically the primary issue that others had. They said, "How can it be that the Geula should come through people who are not just not religious, but anti-religious and very strongly anti-religious?" So that's part of the issue. So we're going to see, Rav Kook is going to address that in our classes. We're going to talk about that, where he's going to basically, I mean, I'll give it away, but he's basically going to take the approach that no matter whether a Jew is religious or not religious, his connection to Eretz Yisrael is bigger than that. So wow. we're going to see when we get there. Yeah, but I'm going to get ahead of the classes. But at least for today, what we've seen is that Rav Kook holds that even in the time of Galut, the Chaim of a Jew is connected to Eretz Yisrael. All right.
Did he succeed to take his community, or he went to Israel by himself?
So a lot of Jews went followed Rav Kook, but the majority of the Jews. You also have to remember that many Jews who moved to Eretz Yisrael were moving to Eretz Yisrael without necessarily having a Zionistic understanding of it. I mean, they were coming because Eretz Yisrael is a Jewish land, and they didn't necessarily agree with the opinions, which we'll deal with later, that you're not allowed to go. So they went, but they weren't necessarily looking to establish a Jewish state. So, for example, if you take people, the opposite of Rav Kook would be, for example, the Neturei Karta, right? They're living in Eretz Yisrael, but they consider the state to be evil, right? So, that's the other extreme, and I don't know if I want to give a class on that, but I think it's important. For at least that's what we're going to discuss in this class.
They
live in Israel because they still hold that Eretz Yisrael is the Chaim of a Jew and all of that. Their only challenge is to the statehood of Eretz Yisrael, but not because they lack in Chavivut Eretz Yisrael. Right? That's a different debate. So that's going to be a little bit of a different discussion. I don't have to defend them, right? So they have their own defenders, but at least for us, to understand where all these ideas are coming from. All right, Bezat Hashem.